Welcome back to another episode of the Tan and J-Man Show here on a steamy Monday night, August 5th. It is Tanner's first wedding anniversary, so he is not joining us tonight as he and his he ditched me for his wife to go out have dinner. So he's a pretty smart man, honestly. But
smart man, Dan.
Yeah. Joining me tonight is my dad, Dan. How you doing tonight, Dad?
I'm doing very, very well, and congratulations on 1 year anniversary to Tanner. I remember going to the wedding, beautiful wedding, and hope you have a great anniversary and many, many, many more to come.
It's about as hot today as it was that day. We had a storm.
I remember that.
Storm rolled through down at his wedding, and it was super humid towards the afternoon and evening, and it's almost the exact same situation here. So
yeah, we got triple digit heat. Heat index here, and but fortunately it looks like a better forecast for the days to come.
I have a trivia question here for you. It is Cubs related. It's pretty straightforward, but this year is the 40th anniversary of the 1984 Cubs team that broke a streak of 39 straight years of not making the playoffs from 1945 to 1984, which is just absurd. I mean, you go back, you know, 39 years now, and we're in 1985. And they went that entire stretch not making the playoffs. So my trivia question is, what player led that team in home runs that season?
Wow. I have some ideas. Can I have like four guesses?
you can have four guesses, but your first one's the only one that's going to count.
Okay.
I'll give you a little bit of a hint. I was surprised at who it was. This guy hit 25 homers that year. So they weren't a big home run hitting team. Of course, they picked up Rick Sutcliffe June, and he ends up winning the Cy Young for him. Sandberg won. I think he won MVP that year, didn't he?
I think he did. Yeah.
Obviously it was a really good team. Birdie Bogey is brought to you by Arlington Public House. Arlington Public House is upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. It is pizza night. They have dill pickle pizza. They have pepperoni. They have margarita. And they have cheese pizza every Monday night at Arlington Public House. So
sounds really good.
Yeah.
Sounds really good. I've never had dill pizza.
Dill pickle pizza. I'm not a big, I don't like pickles at all. Tanner doesn't like pickles either. I know people love it. Usually. I've heard of like cheeseburger pizza, which I'm sure has pickles on it.
Right.
That is interesting. I'm sure for the pickle lovers, they really like it, but
yeah. Well, a couple of weeks ago in Minocqua, Wisconsin, we had a unique pizza that I'd never had before. And I would go after it again. I can't remember what it was called, but it was a spicy something.
Yeah.
It had a very unique taste to it.
It was spicy. It wasn't super spicy, but it also had like a sweetness to it that kind of cut through it. And it was one of the best pizzas I think I've had.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not a big jalapeno guy, but they were good on it. It was like a weird combination for a pizza, and it was really good. But
like the dill pickle pizza, I've never had that. And until I had this, I probably wouldn't have put those combinations together. But after I tasted it, I thought, wow, but I'd like to get one of those dill pickle pizzas.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yep.
Speaking of I want to talk about the 84 Cubs a little bit because just, you were 23 years old at the end of that season. And that was the first time you'd ever watched them play postseason baseball. It's crazy to think about it in itself. It was a lot more difficult to make it back then because only two teams from each league made it. But still, I mean, you think about those Cubs teams from 45 to 84. I mean, there's a stretch in the 60s when they had four Hall of Famers on their roster, you know, Ron Santo, Billy Williams, Ernie Banks, Fergie Jenkins. Right. And I don't even know if they were over 500 all that much. Of course, they had the Curse of the Black Cat in 1969, where they blew a large, like double-digit lead late and lost to the Mets. But you go back all the way to 1945. My grandmother, massive Cubs fan, she was 6 years old when she went to it in 45. And then she had to wait till she was, you know, 42 years old before they made it again, which is just absurd. 45 years old, excuse me, before they made it again. And what do you remember of that team? Of course, it ended poorly with the ball going through Leon Durham's legs. He was kind of Bill Buckner. Less stakes in the NLCS than it was, game six of the World Series. But what do you remember about that team?
Yeah, I mean, I remember how exciting they were. Sutcliffe and Jody Davis. Mm-hmm. Jody Davis had his own song. Harry Carey would always sing, Jody Davis. He had his own song. The team had some swag to it, you know, mm-hmm. with Rhino out there. Third baseman, or was he third base or shortstop, coming in. They didn't think he could play second, and then he becomes later a Hall of Famer, Gold Glove winner multiple years. And so now I'm trying to remember when Sean Dunston actually started. Was that the 84 season, or was that just right after that?
I'm going to pull it up real quick. I think it was a little after that. Mm-hmm. He's not much older than you, if at all. So that would have put him at, 22, 23 years old in 84. So I don't know if he was
young when they called him up, and his incredible arm and bat speed. He reminded me a little bit of Javi Davis, Javi Baez.
Baez. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 38-year-old Larry Boa. Was that shortstop?
Larry Boa. And then was Ron Say? I think he came after that.
Yeah, he played third. Leon Durham at first. Gary Matthews mm-hmm. Sr. in left.
Gary Matthews.
Bobby Dernier out in center and Keith Moreland out in right.
I will say what was fun about that team is you got Dernier. He was a leadoff guy. Sandberg was second. They always had guys on base with the power hitters coming up. Mm-hmm. And back then, that's what you do. You put your, guys that are going to get on base first and second, your high average third, your home run hitter fourth. Yeah. And they still kind of do it a little bit that way. But anymore, it seems like it's all interchangeable. Mm-hmm. But back then, there were clear spots of what kind of hitter would hit what spot.
Yeah, now it's like your best hitters hitting second, usually.
Right.
But back then it was like the Larry Boas would be hitting second because they could make contact, good bunter, all of that. I mean, mm-hmm. Larry Boa hit .223 that year with a .542 OPS, and I bet he hit second quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Sandberg might have hit second as well.
Hit second quite a bit.
The Cubs as a team hit 136 homers, which was second in the National League. Which I think if you hit 136 homers in today's game, I would venture to say you'd be real close to dead last in the major leagues, mm-hmm. not just your own league. Definitely back then it was, get the first guy on, you're going to bunt him over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a leadoff guy. I mean, you have Gary Matthews Sr. He walked 103 times that year with a .410 on-base percentage. That'd be like a MVP level type of season right there.
That's the difference in the game big time, though. I mean, small ball is out the window. I have seen the Cubs play more small ball when they were failing to score, especially with the bottom of the order up this year. But back then, that was just a normal mm-hmm. thing to do. But I would say there was some excitement about that, too, because I remember even though they didn't hit a ton of home runs, they were an exciting team to watch. They had speed on the bases. I mean, Sandberg and Sean Dunston both could steal bases, had a really, really good outfield. I know it's a different game, but I remember it being exciting. Again, I was 23 years old. We didn't have the opportunities to watch it back then as we do today, even though they were on WGN. I didn't really grow up in a house, nor did I. I was in college when I was 23. I didn't have WGN.
Yeah.
So I would get the Saturday games if they were, locally played. So,
It was exciting. Back then, the stolen base was much. It's becoming more prevalent now that they've changed the rules a little mm-hmm. bit. But back then, the Cubs as a team had 154 steals. And I don't think this Cubs team will even sniff that number, if even 100. They might get 100. I mean, I think Nico and PCA combined have 40. So,
right.
But yeah, that pitching staff on paper was really good at 3.75 ERA, which seems great, but that was only 10th in the National League. So it was much more of a pitchers sort of league. Mm-hmm. Of course they had Sutcliffe, but they also had Dennis Eckersley, which I forgot he was a Cub. They had Steve Trout and Scott Sanderson.
He was a starter. I do remember those names. In fact, I think it was right about – it was those players. I don't know if it was 84 or not. I remember going to a Cubs – one of my first Cubs game, we set out in what was called the non-alcohol section, which is now just left field bleachers. And Cubs were rolling, and that I think they were down by three, and they were playing the Mets. And Howard was his last name for the Mets.
Howard Johnson.
A grand slam. Howard Johnson hits a grand slam, and I think that was Sanderson a closer maybe later on? Seemed like he became a closer later.
I don't know. Scott Sanderson. He passed away in 2019. I guess I did not realize that.
Oh, really? Wow. I didn't know that.
He was a bullpen guy. I mean, he was kind of a swingman a little bit, trying to think who I could even compare him to. But like in 89, he made 23 starts, but also had 14 appearances out of the pen.
It may have been closer to 89 that I
probably. Yeah, I would imagine it probably was. I think Howard Johnson was a little closer to those years than he was 84.
Yeah. Who was the manager? I can't remember the name. It wasn't Zimmer in 84.
No, Jim Frey.
Jim Frey, that's right. Yeah. And he later then became front office, I think, Jim Frey.
I want to say, Dallas Green was their GM forever.
Dallas Green.
All I can tell. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Jim Hendry took over for Dallas Green, didn't he?
I think you're right. And then maybe I'm thinking Henry, because then he was front office forever.
Yeah, Jim Hendry, he was their GM for, I would say, 10 years at least.
Yeah, I would say so too.
But
And Theo actually took over for Hendry, I think.
Yeah. Theo took over before Jim Hendry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they mm-hmm. let it was a stupid move by the Ricketts, which is kind of common occurrence at these days. But they fired Jim Hendry, but then let him draft.
I remember that.
And it was he used to be super conservative with the draft. He drafted, then they fired him, but then they're like, hey, can you please sign these guys for us? And so he gave these guys so much money. So all of these guys, like million-dollar bonuses. That was the Javi Baez year. They took him in the first
year. I was going to say, Javi Baez, yeah.
Absurd bonus. So they took Sean Dunstan Jr. in the 13th round. Bad, not even a guy that you probably would have taken in the draft. And I think they gave him a seven-figure bonus. You remember Dylan Maples?
Oh, wow. I do remember Dylan.
He was one of the – they signed him. He was a he was a commit to kick at North Carolina. He was going to be North Carolina's kicker.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they gave him, I think, a million and a half bonus out of the 12th round. Hendry just almost gave him blank checks because he used to be real conservative with that stuff, which that was kind of the Tribune's way too. They didn't like spending a ton of money.
Right.
They've kind of had, four GMs over 40 years, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, that is pretty incredible. And when did Zimmer actually come then?
Zimmer was the 89 manager.
Okay.
Because there's always that famous video in Cubs land anyway, when they clinched the division in 89 with, I think they were in Pittsburgh, and they clinched it.
They were.
And that's when fans were known to run on the field and try to steal stuff.
Right.
So as he's running on, he's taking his hat off and stuffing it in his shirt so he wouldn't get stolen.
I remember that. The wild thing was their closer, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You never know what he was going to do. But
I know. Zimmer was only manager for 4 years, from 88 to 91, and only had one halfway decent season. That was 89 when they went.
84, the closer was Lee Smith, right?
Yeah, Lee Smith. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
He was
a good closer.
He was. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He didn't have a great year that year, though. He had a 3.65 ERA. That was back. I mean, he made 69 appearances, but he threw 101 innings. So that's when you're going multi inning saves.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, which is another thing that's gone by the wayside. Over the past 40 years, there've been, we've talked about this before, but there've been more changes in baseball over the last even 10 years than I think any sport.
Right.
Really.
Right. Yeah. And even the philosophy, I mean, it used to be that you'd send your starter out there and it was nothing for him to throw 120 pitches. Now, rarely do they throw 100. And at the beginning of the season, even if they have a no hitter, they take them out, you know, at 85 pitches or whatever. So it's really changed quite a bit. So.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, we saw what happened to Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood. Those guys were ridden pretty hard, especially in 2003. Right. And they broke down so early. And I mean, even still with manipulating pitch counts and all of that and, you know, pushing guys back and limiting their innings, it doesn't matter. It's kind of been proven that the reason these guys are getting hurt so often is because they're throwing so incredibly hard now.
Right.
That arms just wear out so quickly. There is a study of the top 10 hardest throwers in baseball on average. At least I think it was 9 of them have had Tommy John surgery within the past 4 years.
Oh, wow.
So 90% of your top 10 hardest throwers. The crazy thing is Aroldis Chapman's not one of them. I think he's the one that has crazy. It. So
he must have the different physique that it doesn't bother. It makes me think, though, I mean, I love to see a guy that's going to throw 97 mile an hour as a starter, but, you know, I think we have a lot of throwers and not pitchers. I mean, you go back to the Greg Maddux days. I mean, much like Hendricks today, Kyle Hendricks, I mean, 90, 92, maybe max for Maddux in his prime, but he knew how to pitch. The cutter was amazing. He knew how to spin the ball and, you know, I love seeing a guy that can throw 100, but then drop one in at 85, a slider or, you know, a curveball or something like that. But today, I mean, just throw the ball, man. Yeah. And so more and more surgeries, I think you'll see. I also wonder, is it because we start kids younger throwing curveballs, all that? I've heard two sides of the story. You should start them earlier. I've also heard, I mean, in high school or even middle school, coaches didn't let players throw curveballs.
Well, in like high school coaches and college coaches, they couldn't care less. I mean, they care about, you know, their kids, but like you see guys in like the NCAA tournament for college baseball, they throw 130 pitches on Friday and then they're coming out there for 70 more on Monday because I mean, that's the coach's livelihood is to win. And so they're going to do it. And they have those kids for 3 years essentially. And so that plays a factor, I think. But there was a video I saw a few months ago. It was an eighth grader and it was a video of him. And it was, I think, some sort of facility that some baseball training facility that was bragging about this kid. He was in eighth grade, just finished eighth grade, and he hit 89 miles an hour.
Wow.
But you watch the video and it is the most max effort throw you'll ever see. And nowhere near the strike zone. And it looked painful to even watch him just throw it. And that's probably, I mean, you have these facilities that do a lot of great work with analytics and spinning and stuff like that. But guys like Driveline, which is a very common facility, like I know Patrick Wisdom trains there in the offseason. So many major leaguers, it's kind of burst onto the scene here within the past 10 years. I think they've kind of scaled it back a little bit. But back in the day, they're like, we need to increase velocity 5 to 6 miles an hour, and then they're going to do whatever it takes. And, you know, it works. It does work. But I don't – that probably plays a little bit of a role in these guys just breaking down so early. I mean, you look Shane McClanahan, who's an unbelievable lefty pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's been out all year with Tommy John surgery. So many other guys around the league. I mean, I know Max Scherzer has had injury issues. He's 40 years old, though. But Jacob DeGrom, when he came up, didn't have any injury issues. He was throwing, you know, 93 to 95. And then all of a sudden he's hitting, you know, 101, 102. And here come the injuries. I mean, he hasn't been able to stay healthy for 4 years now. So obviously velocity is the way to get guys out these days. And you need to be able to throw hard. But guys like Justin Steele. I mean, he's, you know, 92, 94, can hit 95. I think those are just as effective because he knows how to pitch and he has good command and all of that. I don't think guys like Kyle Hendricks will last much longer in today's game. He might be the last of his sort of breed.
He may not last tonight.
I know. I assume the wind's blowing out at Wrigley, which is probably not a great.
That's a bad thing. He gives up a lot of fly balls this year.
Still, you look at him though, and he's not throwing any slower than he used to.
Right.
I don't really know what the issue is for him. I know his command's probably not as good, but it seems like command should really never leave you.
Yeah, but a guy that throws slow like that, command is everything.
If
you can't hit the corners,
you're done. And that's the thing with velocity is you have margin for error. Josh Bell on, I think it was Saturday, hit a home run off the fastest pitch. It was the fastest pitch ever recorded that a home run was hit off of. I think Aroldis was pitching for the Pirates, and he hit 102.9. And Josh Bell took a line drive on that short porch at PNC Park. You usually have margin for error when you have velocity. When you're throwing 88, you have zero margin for error. You got to hit the corners. You can't. I mean, major league players have gotten so much better that they are just going to pummel mistakes.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. I wonder what that eighth grader, it doesn't even seem like his body would be developed enough to even have the strength and weight to throw like that. I mean, that's got to be kind of a freaky video.
You remember how like Tim Lincecum used to pitch where he was all the way down. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it looked, except even a more extreme version of that. I mean, he was putting his entire body weight into this thing and his arms just flying through there. And it didn't seem healthy. It didn't look good. It was great. He hit 88, 89 miles an hour, but it was not great.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of long-term effect does that have on a young man like that? Eighth grade, I can't imagine.
So, I wouldn't feel comfortable having my kid do that.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah. So. Yeah, I also think of Strasburg. I mean, he didn't really last that long. He had a couple good years, but, man, he was going to be the guy – the next Mark Pryor. He reminded me of Pryor quite a bit.
Yeah, both West Coast guys. But Strasburg just retired too. But he hadn't pitched since – I don't think he'd pitched since 2019. So he was really only there for maybe 9 years. And he broke down. But he was lights out when he was healthy. That was the issue, though. He wasn't healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sad. I mean, he had just signed the big contract. They just won a World Series, I believe, right after that.
Yeah,
I don't remember him pitching after that.
No, I don't think he did. I don't remember him pitching after the World Series in 2019.
He's still got to be pretty young. What is he, 31, 32?
No, he'd be 36, I would say.
Oh, okay. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Because I think he was a later developing because he walked on at San Diego State and he was this like overweight short kid, and then from his freshman year to his sophomore year, I want to say he grew 4 inches, and he thinned out, and that's kind of when he became this superstar. But that is a tragic case and something that I'm sure the Pittsburgh Pirates are very much looking at as far as Paul Skeens goes, because he has been the best pitcher through 15 starts we've ever seen. I mean, he's the first guy through 13 career appearances to strike out 100 or more. We saw his first career start. Of course, he faced the Cubs and struggled a little bit. I know Miles Mastroboni had a couple hits off him. Nico took him deep. But then his next start was also against the Cubs, and he was as unhittable as I've seen at Wrigley Field in a long time.
I agree.
I think he threw 6 innings and struck out 13. I'm sure they're in contention. But maybe they didn't go out and get a big bat because they're like, okay, we don't want to push him this deep into a season after, he only probably threw 90 innings last year, maybe 100 innings last year, and he'll be, on pace for significantly more this year. And you, especially a small market team like that, you have to keep guys healthy for 6 years until they're no longer team controllable, and then they go sign with a big market team, Dodgers or Yankees hopefully Cubs, if the Cubs actually pretended to be a big market
money.
Team for once.
Now, I think I remember Strasburg, maybe I'm thinking of the wrong guy, when he came up very young, his first year, they shut him down. Didn't they shut him down? And yeah, they were in contention.
Yeah, that was the first year the Nationals were good in a long time. Like, of course, mm-hmm. they were the Expos for a long time from up until 2005. But yeah, they were. That was like a really good Nationals team. I think it was the next year they shut him down. Really good Nationals team, and they shut him down because they knew, and it still didn't. It didn't matter. Because I think Bryce Harper came up that year, and that's kind of when they, with like Jason Worth and Ian Desmond, and they were a really good team.
Turner was on that team too, right?
Who was?
Turner.
Trey Turner. No, he was a little after that.
Oh, okay.
I think he was drafted in 2011.
Okay. But their third baseman, who was their third baseman?
Anthony Rendon would have probably been, he might have been drafted in 2011 because he went to Rice University. I mean, the Nationals are a case in the Baltimore. You can throw the Baltimore Orioles in there. You can throw the Astros in there. You can throw the Cubs in there. That tanking does work because, I mean, you look at the Nationals, they got Rendon in the top 10. They got Harper, Strasburg, Trey Turner all in the first round. They won the World Series. Astros tanked and got, you know, George Springer and Alex Bregman and all these guys. Cubs with Bryant and I guess
Bryant is
still the only guy. Schwarber.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was just thinking about that Cubs team that won the World Series. And that this is how quick things change, and I don't know why. But you got Bryant, who's been a bench player this year. I haven't even hardly seen.
He's been
hurt. Bias is hitting 174.
Yeah, Bias has literally been the worst hitter in all of baseball this year.
Yeah, and he was the guy that I think I was most promised by or most hopeful by because, I mean, he would always make adjustments. They showed a video of Bias. He's up with two strikes. The ball it had to be at least 2 to 3 feet outside, and he swung at it.
Yeah,
and they said, this is Bias in a nutshell.
I think the catcher even set up out there, and it was
he did.
Like the guy
he set
hit
up way up there.
And,
it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing.
Looking back at that 2021 trade deadline, it was really sad to see them all broken up, but Jed Hoyer made the absolute right move on every single
one. Mm-hmm. He absolutely did.
The only one that I'm sure he's like, man, that was not smart, was just non-tendering Kyle Schwarber for over, you know, $8 million. And he's ended up being the best out of the bunch. Because Bryant, I don't even know if Bryant's played an entire season, like all together, games-wise. I don't think he's played even 162 games in his career there. Javi's been terrible, and Rizzo can't stay healthy now, and he's older. And it's not really hitting either. So that was a good Jed Hoyer move.
That was good. I hated it at the moment, but there were a lot of emotions involved because they won a World Series after 108 years. But I get it. I mean, and maybe he should have made some more moves last year at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. That would have helped him, you know. So interesting. Just to go back to the original question, I know we kind of veered off, but the 1984 Cubs, I was just thinking, I remember seeing the disappointment of Leon's heir, you know, which kept, was it San Diego?
Yeah.
Or was that?
Padres.
Yeah, San Diego. Yeah, Padres alive and ended up costing them the game. What was worse in your mind? I mean, you weren't alive then, but you saw the Barkman ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was the worst? I mean, what went through my mind? I watched them both, and I really did start believe the narrative that the Cubs really are cursed.
I think honestly they won the game, but I think the worst I've ever felt was Rajay Davis's homer in the eighth inning. That was significantly worse than, you know, Bartman or, you know, Alex Gonzalez.
I totally agree.
That double play.
Yeah.
Cause that's when I'm like, maybe they really are. Maybe there's this billy goat out there that's still cursing them.
And I think everybody's mouth just went.
Yeah, I
really?
it was the worst feeling. I can't even describe it. I still can't even watch it, even though I know they win.
I know it. Thank God for the rain delay.
Yeah.
I don't know if it wasn't for that rain delay, could they have put it back together again? Because all of them are thinking the same thing. I guess we are cursed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure it crept into all of their minds at some point. I know it did mine, but the Davis is Homer, in my opinion. Of course, I was only 11 years old with the 2003 team. And that was obviously their best chance they'd had since 45. Because, you know, 98, I think they got swept by Atlanta, didn't they, in 98? They won the game 163 against San Fran. I think they won one against San Francisco in 89. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was just a five-game set in 84, wasn't it, before they met?
I think it was 84. I do remember 89, the big deal was Mark Grace and Will Clark.
Will Clark, yeah.
I mean, watching those guys, you just knew they weren't going to make an out. Whoever's up last would probably win that series. And sure enough, and that was the year, of course, Cubs lost in the championship, National League championship game. And then they went to the World Series against Oakland, and that earthquake happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
1989.
Al Michaels always talks about like his most memorable, and of course, calling the Miracle on Ice is number one, but he said number two is the earthquake game.
Yeah. I remember watching it, and I had to be somewhere that night, but I turned it on for a while and I thought, I wonder what happened. And then they started showing, span out in the camera, and there was a building on fire not far, and people were taking cover. They took the teams off the, at first they didn't know if there was damage in the stadium. They thought it was minor at first, and then reports began to come in. That was a pretty major earthquake.
Terrible.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I went and looked up Mark Grace and Will Clark's stats from that series. Mm-hmm. Mark Grace was 11 for 17 with four walks.
Unbelievable.
He hit .647 with a .682 on base and a 1,118 slugging percentage. Will Clark went 13 for 20 with two homers. He somehow outslugged, or he had an OPS that was 100 points higher than Mark Grace. So you weren't
lying. It was incredible.
You weren't lying.
It was incredible. I think Cubs had a better record than, San Diego. San Francisco, I'm sorry, had a better record than San Francisco. I think they were – I don't know if they were the higher seed. I can't remember how we did it back then, but they were everybody's pick to go to the World Series.
Yeah.
Finally, the curse would be broken. And then I'm trying to remember the closer. I think it was Goose Gossage came in, and you think, okay, I forgot what game it was. And he gave up a save, blew a save. And that was just unheard of back then. So
yeah,
it was Goose.
Cubs went 93-69, and Giants were 92-70, so they were a little better.
Okay.
Not a whole lot of other people did a whole lot offensively for the Giants. Kevin Mitchell had a good series. Mm-hmm. Matt Williams hit a couple homers, both really good players. For the Cubs, it was pretty much Mark Grace, and then Ryan Sandberg had a good series. Jerome Walton had a pretty good series, but not really anyone else did anything. It was Mitch Williams. He only threw an inning though.
Okay, Mitch Williams, yeah.
Let's see. Steve Wilson
like
Steve Wilson blew a save.
He was a lefty. I remember Steve.
Yeah.
Canadian. So, yeah, that was pretty disappointing. I remember that. And again, that's 89, so that's a lot of years ago. We didn't have the technology we have today. It was a different day to watch baseball back then, but there was a lot of excitement around Cubs baseball.
Yeah.
And then they really trailed off. I don't think they made the playoffs again until 98.
Yeah. Of course it was the dark days of baseball with the strike and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then of course, Sosa and McGuire juicing up and saving baseball in a sense. This past, 24 years has kind of been the golden age of Cubs baseball here, of the live ball era, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Even today, I like to watch them. I watch almost every game, even though I get disgusted with them.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So. Yeah. Speaking of this this year's team. They played a little better this past week. They had a rough series in Cincinnati where they only won one, but then followed it up winning 3 of 4 against St. Louis, which is always fun to, you know, win against St. Louis, especially in a 4-game series. Could have been a sweep after they blew a game on Saturday, but Cubs came back from 2 down in the 9th on Thursday, so it kind of equaled that out. But Brewers have really started to play some pretty poor baseball here. Cubs are find themselves only 8.5 out behind the Brewers.
That's incredible.
Believe it or not. But they're still, you know, 6 out of a wild card spot. Arizona Diamondbacks are playing well. Padres and Braves are both playing well. So it's going to be real tough to really make any noise. But they do have the easiest schedule in the National League the rest of the way, win percentage-wise.
Oh, wow.
It's probably helped by, you know, they get to face the White Sox for 2 this weekend. They also get the Tigers, and they get a bad Blue Jays team coming in. But, I mean, they still have to go to Philadelphia, to L.A. Dodgers. They have the Twins who are good. Cleveland Guardians are good. So, sure, on paper, it feels like they have, you know, the best or the easiest record. But they didn't play good – haven't played good against the Reds or Pittsburgh this year. They have them left.
Really haven't, yeah.
And this is, and they still have the Yankees left as well. This is the thing I hate about the new schedule is it kind of diminishes, it heightens the divisional games because you don't play them that much, but it also diminishes the division games because you don't play them that much. You know, I miss the days when they'd play, you know, 16, 18 times. And now, you know, you're playing the Yankees in September or the Blue Jays in August. And I just, I miss the days where they had said, okay, this is interleague play. This weekend's interleague play.
Right.
In May, you have one in June, and then you're done. And you play one division. And I have not liked the newer schedule.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. Beginning of August, and you're already done with the Cardinals. You're done with the Brewers. I think you have one more with Cincinnati, one more series with Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And that's it. You're done with your division.
They go to Pittsburgh, and they host the Reds. It's final weekend of the year. So final series of the year. I just don't like it. I mean, they have 4 games against the White Sox, and that means, you know, they're off Thursday and then they don't play Sunday. They do not have a game Sunday.
This coming Sunday?
Yeah, they don't have a game. They play the White Sox Friday and Saturday. They're off Sunday and then they go to Cleveland.
I don't know that I've ever seen them miss a Sunday game.
Yeah, it's this stupid new schedule because instead you know, it used to be you play the White Sox for 3 in Wrigley, White Sox for 3. In whatever their stadium's called now. And now, you have the two gamers. And, so Cubs have an off day Sunday, which is boring.
That's weird.
Because there's
Thursday and Sunday then.
There's no – if you're going to do this on like an NFL Sunday where, you know, there's something else to watch.
I agree. Totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what were the Cubs' record or how far out were they last year at this time? Because it seems like right after the All-Star break, maybe August, they started really putting it together, went on a run. In fact, we came pretty close to catching Milwaukee, if I remember, like 1 game out at one time.
They finished 1 game out of the wild card. I think Brewers were really good. The problem with this is they only give me how far they're out in the division. But really the game that kind of turned them around was the game we went to against Boston where Belly hit a grand slam.
Oh, yeah.
They were 42-48 that game. And then they rattled. They ended up losing the next 2, actually. But then they rattled off 10 of their next 11 because they won that huge series, 4-game series against the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And then they go to St. Louis and they win the first 3. And the famous play was Tauchman robbing that walk.
Oh, yeah. Home. I remember that.
They you know what? You're right. They got to a game and a half behind the Brewers August 6th. And a game and a half behind the Brewers September 6th. And they ended up 9 games out because they just folded down the stretch because Jed Hoyer didn't go out and get bullpen arms when, you know, David Ross was pitching Mark Leiter Jr. and Albert Ausley and Merriweather almost every single day, it felt like, and they all wore down. And
that's where the schedule was bad, if I remember right, because they didn't have off days and you couldn't reset the pitching.
And, you know, they had to, the final week of the year, they have to go to Atlanta and to Milwaukee. And that's right. And they should have swept that Atlanta series, of course. Seiya Suzuki drops that fly ball. But it really started. They lost 2-3 in Colorado. Then they got swept at Arizona. If they win one of those games against Arizona, they're probably in the playoffs because that's the team they finished behind.
And Arizona's not.
Yeah.
Who went to the World Series.
And they end up going to the World Series. Yeah. Including that one that is probably the reason why they ended up missing it altogether was that 13-inning one where the Cubs had a lead. There were two outs. Wesneski's up pitching. I think it was bases loaded. And he gets a liner back to him, and it hits off his back. And Dansby misread it. He could have probably caught it in the air, but he played it on a bounce, and they didn't get the guy at first in the 13th, and they end up getting a hit the next or the game's over.
I remember that.
Cubs win, and they end up getting swept. And then they lose 2-3 at home to a bad Pittsburgh team. That didn't help matters either. But it was a little earlier they started their winning streak, but hopefully – they can go on a little bit of a run and at least get over 500 and hang your hat on something because the roster is too good to continue to be
playing. Mm-hmm. And give some hope for next year. I think I'm seeing better out of Council now. There's a lot more passion. Seems like he's gaining ownership of this team. So that gives me hope for the future. I mean, they have some really good players that are signed for long term, and but still, I mean, who knows if Belly's going to opt out this year?
I can't imagine. He knows.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's going to get a better deal. Put it that way. So,
One thing I'll say about Council is he is kind of dead in the dugout, which I think that's just his style.
Right. I think so.
In game, for the most part, I think he's been fantastic. His bullpen management's been good. I mean, he's pitching the guys he has. I mean, the problem is Hector Neris is your best bullpen guy that you can go to in the ninth inning. That's the issue. Sure. I mean, he had Mark Leiter Jr. there, but he's kind of a specialist, if you will,
right?
A lefty specialist for being a right-handed pitcher because he has that good split.
Right.
But in game, I think his lineup management's been fantastic. The way he just puts players in position to succeed. Now it's up to them to go succeed, and they haven't. They haven't done it. And now, if the offense is starting to heat up a little bit, Seiya's been on a really nice roll the past month and a half. PCA is really starting to turn around. He was striking out almost 50% of his plate appearances, and now. He hasn't struck out in his last 16 at-bats and only 3 in his last 34.
Wow, so, that's great.
Yeah, he's done this at every level, though. He struggled at single-A, double-A, triple-A for the first 100 plate appearances. Then he makes the adjustment, and now we're seeing him hit the ball harder than he has. Of course, he's great defensively. He had that misstep in the eighth inning on Saturday where it was more of a miscommunication than it was anything. It was just kind of a no man's land, and he needs to let Nico take that ball, or he needs to be really convicted and going calling him off and going and getting it, which we've seen him do. So that's something to look forward to. Three of their top prospects have just got called up to Triple A yesterday.
I saw that.
Matt Shaw, that. Calvin Alcantara, who they got for Anthony Rizzo, and then James Triantos. So hopefully we'll be seeing those guys.
They got some young talent.
They do.
Yeah, definitely.
They have a very good farm system. It is lacking on the, future superstar sort of deal. Of course, not many teams have what the Cubs had back in 2014 when they had, Bryant down there, Javi and Addison Russell and Schwarber.
And even Soler.
I thought Soler would be like the guy who had the least probability of being a bust, and he kind of was a bust for the Cubs. He's had a good career elsewhere.
He was,
you can even throw like the Baltimore Orioles in there where they built through the farm system of all these studs. And even Jed Hoyer said that he just doesn't think you can do that like they did it. So now he needs to go out and trade from that farm system depth and go get you a superstar. Go get you a Vladdy Jr. Hoyer had an interview over the last week that annoyed a lot of Cubs fans, and it annoyed me too. He said that he's probably more risk averse than most when it comes to signing, $300+ million deals. And we're like, duh, of course. I mean, we've been seeing that for years now. The guy they need to go do it for and break the bank for is Juan Soto, and he is a free agent. So I was beating that drum in the offseason, go trade for him, because the Yankees didn't really give up as much as they could have for him. And I felt like the Cubs could have easily put together a trade package to go get a Juan Soto. He would have completely changed this offense. They'd be a playoff team if they had a Juan Soto. And he's 24 years old, you know? So
Yeah, I agree. I think he's too risk adverse. And I don't know where that comes from. I mean,
either.
Theo seemed to I mean, he made some stupid decisions, but he traded away some good players, but he had to take the risk. If you want to build a team, if you're flying along, I mean, even Geraldus Chapman, I mean, that was pretty high risk, but huge reward. Yeah, but what did we give up for him?
Yeah, I mean, they gave up Gleyber Torres, who's he's been a good part of the Yankees. Billy McKinney was another guy. And that, I mean, they gave up like a couple top 100, top 50 sort of prospects for a, you know, a guy who's going to throw one inning for you. And, of course, I'm glad they did, because they don't win that thing without him.
I don't think they win without him.
Yep. The very next year, it was a stupid deal trading, you know, Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease for Jose Quintana. It was a smart move at the time because Quintana was really good with the White Sox, very consistent. And those guys were in the lower levels of the minors. But you have to go do that. Like, you have to.
You have to, yeah.
You have the farm system depth. You just – you have to do it, or you're going to continue to be in this, you know, mediocre, average sort of team like they've been the past couple years. So,
yeah. Does Jed Hoyer save his job if he makes it to 500, or you think he's pretty secure into the
game? I think he's pretty secure. He should be feeling quite the heat next year, though. And hopefully he'll feel the heat enough where he goes out and makes, you know, big moves. Cause this will be year five. Next year will be year five of him being the dude. And, you know, he was the dude in San Diego for a little while and they went very poorly. I gotta do some segments here first. We only have 13 minutes. I was worried we weren't going to have enough to talk about. We've had plenty.
It's gone past.
Yeah, starting with the pick six segment, where you know how it works. I took six topics, and they're all – five of them are like our teams. So the three Dolphins guys that got paid, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Tua Tagovailoa.
Amazing. Honestly, I wonder if Waddle will be the best deal in there. but, man, finally I feel like we're going for it. And a lot of criticism against Tua. I don't get it. I mean, there's risk and reward for everything you do, but I'm pretty excited about the future.
Yeah, if a guy like Trevor Lawrence or Jared Goff's hitting 200 plus million, Tua should even be more than that. But
And Tyreek Hill was just voted the number one player in the NFL.
That's a pretty good negotiating tactic for him. So
yeah, I do think Waddle is the guy to watch in the next 3 years, though.
Yeah,
I really do.
I agree. Then I have two Cubs guys here, Jed Hoyer, which we kind of mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, he hasn't done much. He hasn't won. So I think you either put it together. There is expectations of a winner for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't win, he needs to bow out. But the question is, who else do they get?
That's the problem. Yeah.
And
you would think it'd be a pretty high job up on the probably top five job. It's probably less so now that they've won one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know who you'd have out there. I wouldn't want to promote from within because I don't really know what their GM Carter Hawkins does, honestly. But I'm sure a lot of people would be vying for that president of baseball ops with the Cubs.
Definitely.
Another guy we mentioned, Craig Counsell.
Craig Counsell, you know, I was pretty frustrated with him. But he seems to be more likable. Of course, I never liked him when he was with the Brewers.
Couldn't stand him. Yeah,
couldn't stand him. I was happy when they signed him. My concern is he's got a long term deal, $8 million a year. I know that doesn't hit on the salary cap as much, but you know, I'm liking him more. I've seen a little bit more passion. You know, it's been hard for me to find a like to him.
Yeah, I could not stand him with the Brewers. I thought he was whiny. And
me too.
You know, there's that whole thing where he whined about the Cubs because they canceled a game because the threat of rain, and it was sunny the entire day. And there was this major threat, and he wouldn't shut up about it for like 2 years. He talked about how the Cubs postponed a game due to the forecast, and didn't even just, they said you didn't even step outside. It's beautiful. So it's taken me a while to warm up to him. But I'm getting there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, last one here is Jim Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh. I mean, it's easy for me to vote against him, to root against him.
Yeah.
But he's a football guy. I mean, wherever he goes, he seems to have success. And my question will be now with San Diego. I remember when he was at San Francisco, tremendous success, and then lost the locker room.
Yeah.
And so will his style be good for pro players?
Yeah.
Certainly worked for college, no doubt.
Yeah, he's a goofy guy. He's eccentric. He's a little strange, and it will be interesting. It did work with San Francisco, and now that he's in LA, I don't know if it'll go over well. But it looks like Michigan might be getting hit with some NCAA violations over the new findings, where the now head coach Sherrone Moore, who was interim, there was like 52 deleted text messages. There were all sorts of stuff. So they might be dropping that hammer. They might make them vacate a title, which would be pretty hilarious. But
it makes me think of Pete Carroll. I mean, he left.
Very similar.
He left USC because he pretty much had to.
Yeah, he had to. That's a good comparison.
I wonder if Jim Harbaugh is the same. Yeah. By the way, I never liked John Harbaugh, but he is a heck of a coach.
He is, yeah.
Heck of a coach.
Yeah. So that is the Pick Six segment, which is brought to you by Proforma Print 2 Promo Group. Over 50 years in experience for all your printing needs. Go contact Proforma Print 2 Promo Group. Moving on this day in the sports land. On this day in 1921, KDKA Pittsburgh presents the first radio broadcast of Major League Baseball as the Pirates beat the Phillies 8-0. First radio broadcast, 1921. 1936, this was a pretty famous Olympics. American athlete Jesse Owens wins the 200-meter in a world record time of 20.7 seconds, his third gold medal of the Berlin Olympics in front of Adolf Hitler.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy. That's pretty famous, him doing that. On this day in – man, there's not a whole lot. Of course, a lot of Olympics. I'm now in the 70s and there's nothing.
Yeah, the middle of the summer, it's probably hard to find on this day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. On this day in 1979, Philadelphia Phillies third baseman Pete Rose collect his National League record 2,427th career single. He had that many singles. Wow. That's more than a lot of guys had hits.
Wow, crazy. Yeah, and he's not a Hall of Famer.
Not a Hall of Famer due to his own doing. I've never liked the guy. He's a scumbag. Yeah, he's a good enough baseball player to get in, not a good enough human to get in the Hall of Fame. Not that that matters. But on this day in 1986, Giants left-handed pitcher Steve Carlton becomes the second to reach 4,000 strikeout milestone. On this day in 1999, Mark McGwire became the 16th Major League Baseball player to reach 500 home runs.
He did a lot of that in just a few years.
Yeah, he did. on this day in 2005, St. Louis Cardinals first baseman Albert Pujols became the first player to connect for 30 home runs in each of his first five MLB seasons. He was
a cup killer.
Yeah, he. I think he's the greatest right-handed hitter of my lifetime.
Yep, I agree.
That dude was maybe the most feared hitter outside of Barry Bonds of my lifetime too.
Yeah,
he was crazy.
Yeah, and he played in our division.
Yeah. We saw him hit a homer live in 2005. We sat through that 3-hour rain delay, and he
comes out and
hits a homer. Mm-hmm. I think in the first inning. On this day. In 2013, Major League Baseball banned New York Yankees infielder Alex Rodriguez for 211 games as a result of the Biogenesis Laboratory scandal.
Wow.
And that's going to do it. I actually have one Cubs on this day that I saw that I want to talk about on Twitter. On this day in 2011, Tony Campana hit his one and only Major League homer, and it was an inside the park homer against the Cincinnati Reds, and it is one of the most it is indirectly one of the most important plays in Cubs history, because he hits it down the left field line. Yonder Alonso for the Reds, who's a first baseman, but he's obviously blocked by Joey Votto, is playing left field. He botches that ball completely, and it gets all the way to the wall. It should have been just a double, and it gets all the way to the wall. The Reds find out Yonder Alonso can't play left field, so they trade him to the San Diego Padres, because the Padres liked Yonder Alonso more than they liked another first baseman named Anthony Rizzo. And the Padres in turn trade Anthony Rizzo to the Chicago Cubs. So Tony Campana indirectly played a role in Anthony Rizzo becoming a Chicago Cub. So
I would have never known that. He was fun to watch. He couldn't hit for anything.
Yeah, he was super fast. I mean,
he
fast.
Could bunt. Yeah, super fast. I don't know how his speed would relate to PCA.
I think PCA is quite a bit faster, believe it or not.
Oh, do you really?
I think he's fast.
Of course,
I think the fastest guy we've ever seen is Billy Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable speed. PCA is a notch below that. But PCA, when he gets on, I mean, he's 21 for 21, I think, on steals.
Right.
He's fun to watch out there. But
He is fun to watch. And thank God they just kept on playing him.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And they need to continue to keep on playing him. I think they will now. Because I was nervous when they didn't trade Tauchman that they would give Tauchman some plate appearances over PCA. And that's not what I want. But on this day is brought to you by Mooney Woodcrafts. Mooney Woodcrafts is a owned by veteran Thaddeus Mooney. I never have the read up. I can never find the read. I don't look for the read, honestly, I'll be honest with you. But it is Christmas time is coming here within about 4 months. He's an incredibly talented woodworker. He can carve incredible stuff into wood. So contact Thad Mooney and Mooney Woodcrafts. I have not done a book it prediction. And I don't even know where I can go with the book it prediction. J-Man's book it prediction of the week is brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau insurance agent Travis Watchering for life, home, auto, business, renters, workers' comp, and farm insurance. Contact Travis at 219-869-4561. His email is travis.watchering@infb.com. The White Sox have lost 20 games in a row. And my book it prediction is going to be, I got to go look at the White Sox schedule to see who they play this week. They are 27-87. They have the lowest win percentage in the history of baseball. If the season ended today, first team ever to lose 80 plus games, by the end of July. Let's see if my internet allows it. The White Sox this week play at Oakland for three. So there is potential that they could get a win, but I don't think they get a win. There's just part of me that knows they're going to break what will then be a 23-game losing streak against the Chicago Cubs on Friday night. I hope I'm wrong.
I would hate that. Totally
yeah, I've watched baseball and the Cubs enough to know it's probably coming. On it'll be 95% Cubs fans at guaranteed rate.
I'm hoping it comes in Oakland so they get it off their chest.
Yeah, me too, because that team is miserable. And I'm surprised their manager survived, but I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf cares a whole lot. Here with about a minute left, I'll give you the birdie bogey. What player led the Chicago Cubs in home runs in 1984?
I have two names, but I'm going to guess. I really like this player. Probably most people wouldn't guess him, but I'm going to say Leon Durham.
He was second. That is a good guess, though.
Matthews?
It was not. It was actually Ron Say.
Ron Say. I had his name in there, too, and I thought, nah. I didn't think Ron was with him the whole year, that year.
Yeah, he was an old guy, too. I think he was like 36 or 37. And he hit 25. Leon hit 24. And then I think Sarge, I just saw it hit 14 or 15.
Okay. That was back in the day that if you hit 20 – you were like
a superstar.
You were the superstar. Definitely. Good show, Duff.
That's going to do it for the Tan and J-Man show live on the ISC Sports Network. Thanks to my dad for joining me as always. And Tanner and I will be back next Monday previewing the Big 12. Back to our college football preview. So have a fantastic week, everybody.
Excellent. Happy anniversary, Tanner.